You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
There is no doubt we face a profound economic challenge. We now need stability and unity. I pledge that I will serve you with integrity and humility.
The most important objective for our country right now is stability. Governments cannot eliminate volatility in markets.
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Welcome to the programme today. We're bringing you highlights from Prime Minister's questions as Rishi Sunak faces off against the Labour leader Keir Starmer. But we're also at the delightful point of one of the most colourful parts of the advent calendar of strikes that we've been paying such close attention to on the Bloomberg terminal. So today we have, it's the second of the first 48-hour strike by RMT rail workers, so disruption on the railways. We've also got disruption to Royal Mail as postal workers are on strike as well. And from tomorrow then, the nurses join them in as well.
Yes, bus drivers and baggage handlers striking on Friday and Saturday. And it looks like driving instructors are pretty much striking for the entire Christmas period. So they'll be losing a lot of money, although perhaps having a bit of nice time off as well.
Well, I mean, yeah, it depends on which way you want to look at it. It's interesting, though, to see how public opinion is shaping up during this period as well, though. The latest Kantar poll looking at support for strikers across the different sectors that are taking industrial action. Nurses have the highest support, perhaps unsurprisingly, 54% of the public supporting their strike action, followed by ambulance workers at 50% support, firefighters at 48%, railway workers at 40%. So 40% supporting, 50% opposing their strike action, least support. Driving test examiners, just 31%. I wonder if that's because people don't like taking their driving test and thus have a generally unfavourable opinion of them.
And also, driving tests are very expensive, aren't they? So I wonder if people feel like, oh, they've already got enough money. Well, having said that, of course, train tickets are very expensive, but I think probably people feel a lot of that doesn't filter through to the staff themselves. But interesting to see what this strike over Christmas does for support. If it goes ahead, I think there's a chance that they could all end up calling it off just in time for those Christmas strikes. But if they don't, then I think disrupting Christmas itself is going to be pretty unpopular with a lot of people.
Yeah, and we're seeing that play out in the front pages today as well. You know, outrage in some papers, particularly The Sun, at Mick Lynch from the RMT union as well. He's spoken before about how he's used to becoming a lightning rod for criticism during industrial action. A different poll from Savanta Comrades showing that 56% of the public saying that railway workers should not take industrial action during the holiday period. That support has been slipping 8 points since October. Let's listen into Prime Minister's questions. Here's Keir Starmer.
At risk and profit from their misery. They must be broken up and brought to justice. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, tomorrow will be the first ever nationwide nurses' strike. All the Prime Minister has to do to stop that is to open the door and discuss pay with them. If he did, the whole country would breathe a sigh of relief. Yeah. Why won't he?
Yeah. Prime Minister. Mr. Speaker, we have consistently spoken to all the unions involved in all the pay disputes that there are. But I am glad he's raised our nurses, because they do incredible work, and it's worth putting on record. It's worth putting on record what exactly we have done for our nurses. Last year, when everyone else in the public sector had a public sector pay freeze, the nurses received a 3% pay rise. When the RCN asked for more in-work training, we gave every nurse and midwife a £1,000 training budget. And when they asked for nurses' bursaries, we made sure that every nursing student received a £5,000 grant. That's because we do work constructively, and we will continue to back our nurses.
Mr. Speaker, nurses going on strike is a badge of shame for this government. Instead of showing leadership, he's playing games with people's health. And there is a human cost. Alex from Chester has been waiting for a gallbladder operation for nearly 6 months. He's in so much pain, he's been off school since then. His operation has already been cancelled twice. His mum, who I spoke to this morning, is worried sick. When she heard that strikes could be called off, she was massively relieved. She's desperate for the Prime Minister to resolve this. All he needs to do is simply meet the nurses. Now, Alex's mum is listening to this. She doesn't want to hear him blaming everybody else. She doesn't want his usual ducking of the question. She's tuned in now, because she wants him to explain what is he going to do to resolve the nursing strike.
Well, Mr. Speaker, it's not just Alex. There are millions of others across this country, Alex and Mark, millions of others who will have their healthcare disrupted because of the strike. Now, the Honourable Gentleman says to get round the table, but we all know what that means, Mr. Speaker. That is just simply a political formula for avoiding taking a position on this issue. If he thinks the strikes are wrong, he should say so. If he thinks it's right that pay demands of 19% are met, then he should say so. What's weak, Mr. Speaker, is he's not strong enough to stand up to the union.
Mr. Speaker, we know it's Christmas, but the party's not started yet. Come on, kids.
Mr. Speaker, in 12 hours' time, there's a nurses' strike. All he needs to do is meet the nurses. His inaction speaks volumes. As ever with this Prime Minister, it's Tory politics first, patient second. We've never seen a nurses' strike like this before. They've been forced into it because the government has broken the health system. Ask anyone in the NHS. They will tell you they don't have enough staff. 133,000 vacancies. And there's an obvious solution. Scrap the non-dom status and use the money to bring through the next generation of doctors and nurses. That's what Labour would do. Why hasn't he got the guts to do it?
Mr. Speaker, we're already investing billions more in the NHS. We're already hiring thousands more doctors and nurses. But he asks about backlog. He asks about backlogs and the waiting times in the NHS. And yes, what he always fails to acknowledge is the impact that COVID did, Mr. Speaker. That's why we're facing pressures. But we do have a plan. Not just more money, not just more doctors and nurses, new diagnostic centres carrying out millions of checks and scans, new surgical hubs delivering more elective surgery. But if we'd listened to him, Mr. Speaker, the backlog would still be growing, and that's because we'd still be in lockdown.
As usual, Mr. Speaker, he tries to blame everyone else. His department His department commissioned a report into the NHS, which reported on Monday. That report said we've had 10 years of managed decline. Yep. It was not COVID. Yep. Responsibility is sitting right there. Absolutely. And the reason he can't choose nurses over non-doms is because he's too weak to stand up for tax avoiders. For 12 years, they haven't trained enough doctors and nurses. So we have the absurd situation of the NHS spending billions on agency workers to fill the gap. Why should the country have to put up with money that should be spent treating patients being wasted plugging gaps instead?
Mr. Speaker, let me tell the honourable gentleman what we are doing. We are actually listening to the independent pay review bodies. They want to undermine them. We've offered a fair pay deal. They can't even decide on a number amongst themselves. We're actually protecting the public. They're protecting their paymasters, Mr. Speaker. For working people in this country, it's Labour's nightmare before Christmas.
Keir Starmer.
There he goes again, pretending everything is fine. Try telling that to those on waiting lists or those that can't afford to pay for a next day GP appointment. After 12 years of Tory failure, winter has arrived for our public services, and we've got a Prime Minister who has curled up in a ball and gone into hibernation. If he can't act on behalf of patients or nurses or everyone who wants these strikes called off, then surely the whole country is entitled to ask, what is the point of him and what is the point of the government he's supposed to be leading?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, he talks about COVID not having an impact. Ambulance waiting times for Category 1 ambulance waiting times in February of 2020 were actually completely on target, Mr. Speaker. COVID has an impact, and that's why, as the chief executive of the NHS has acknowledged, this government is serious about its commitment to prioritise the NHS. But, Mr. Speaker, let's just have a look at the NHS in Labour-run Wales, shall we? The worst A&E times in the country, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, under the last Labour government, we had fair pay for nurses and no strikes. Yeah. So I won't be taking lectures from him about that.
Order. Mr. Bowie, you promised to behave. Don't give me a Christmas present you won't want. Come on, Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, this is our final PMQs of the year. So I hope you will part. Oh, really? I hope you will. Mr. Speaker, what I was going to say was I hope you will pass on all of our thanks, at least on this side, to all those who kept our house and our democracy working. Yeah. And I want to finish this year thinking about our friends in Ukraine. As a result of Putin's barbaric assault on their freedom, millions will spend Christmas in sub-zero temperatures without heating, electricity or hot water. Their suffering is unimaginable, but their bravery is awe-inspiring. So will the Prime Minister join me in saying that whatever other difficulties and disagreements we have across this dispatch box, we are and will remain united in our unwavering support for Ukraine's freedom, its liberty and its victory.
Well, Mr. Speaker, can I join with the honourable gentleman in thanking and paying tribute to all the staff of the House for the fantastic work that they do to support all of us. And I appreciate his comments on Ukraine. It's been a point of incredible unity across this House and indeed the country, something that we can all be proud of in our country, that we have stood behind Ukraine at its hour of need. And as I said yesterday, this Christmas, many families will be laying an extra place at their Christmas table. And that speaks to the generosity and compassion of our nation. And long may that continue.
Angela Richards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The A3 connects London to Portsmouth through Guildford, and I was delighted to see the new Solent Freeport announced last week, which will increase traffic flows. As the A3 narrows through Guildford, it is sadly the most polluted road in the strategic road network. Short-term sticking plasters like putting up 9-metre-high air pollution barriers that will entrench divisions in Guildford is not acceptable to me or my constituents. Does my right honourable friend agree with me that it is time to think big, it is time to think long-term, and it is time time to tunnel the A3 under Guildford.
Prime Minister.
Well, can I thank my honourable friend for the question. I know this is an issue that she has long championed. I am told that National Highways are developing a range of different possibilities and solutions for the A3 through Guildford, and I know the Department for Transport will consider the case as it plans its future infrastructure investments.
SNP leader Stephen Flynn.
I wish to join with the Prime Minister and the Leader of Opposition in extending my party's thoughts to all of those involved in the terrible tragedy in the Channel this morning. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, thanks to positive and proactive negotiations between the Scottish Government and Unite and Unison Health Unions, a pay settlement has been reached and strike action averted. Yeah. By stark contrast, the UK Health Secretary appears completely unwilling to negotiate with unions on pay, and strike action is very much still on the table. Shame. So may I ask the Prime Minister, when will he see the error of his ways and follow the Scottish Government's lead?
Yeah.
Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm glad the UK Government was able to provide £1.5 billion in extra funding to the Scottish Government for public services. And the Health Secretary and other ministers have engaged fully, not just with the unions, but with an independent pay-setting process, which takes the politics out of the process and ensures that we can meet those independent requirements with a fair pay deal.
Stephen Flynn.
Mr. Speaker, let's be clear. Those words will ring hollow in the ears of those people who, unlike the Prime Minister, can't nip into Waitrose for their shopping, nor indeed even turn on their heating at this moment in time. And that's particularly true for people in Scotland, because as we know, average energy bills in Scotland are not anticipated to be £2,500 per year. They're expected to be £3,300 per year. People are genuinely terrified, and that's despite the fact that Scotland produces 6 times more gas than we consume, with some 80% of our electricity coming from low-carbon sources. Decades of failed UK energy and regulatory policy coming home to roost. Is it not the case that Scotland has the energy? We just need the power.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm glad the honourable gentleman raised the question of energy support. And it's because of the actions of this government that we are providing every household in this country with around £900 of support with their energy bills this winter, £55 billion worth of support. And on top of that, next year, there will be extra cost of living payments worth up to £1,200 for the most vulnerable, whether that's those on means-tested benefits, pensioners, or indeed disabled. This is a government that will always look after the most vulnerable in our society.
Stephen Metcalf.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do. That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers, they're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do, that's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
That was the Prime Minister responding there to questions from the SNP leader in Westminster, Stephen Flynn. Before that, we heard a question from the Guildford MP, Angela Richardson, about a local issue and, of course, the exchange with Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer in attack mode, I think it's fair to say. Prime Minister's questions almost entirely focused on the nurses' strike that we've been talking about beforehand. Got definitely, you know, some good lines in there from Keir Starmer saying nurses going on strike was a badge of shame for Rishi Sunak. Why hasn't he got the guts to do something about the problems of the health service? And that that the Prime Minister had curled up in a ball and gone into hibernation. What is the point of him?
Yeah, I thought Keir Starmer was on very good form today. I think that's probably his best performance against Rishi Sunak that I remember. I thought last time it was pretty much a score draw and they both seemed to get some good points. Some of them, some of the things falling a bit flat. But I thought Keir Starmer really kind of rammed it home this time. And I thought that Rishi Sunak didn't really kind of get to grips with any of his questions. Starmer saying that they've given a bigger pay rise to nurses last year, 3%, when most public sector workers got virtually nothing, £1,000 training for every nurse. So he was making the point that the government is trying to do its best with nurses. Also, in the second question, saying, does the Labour leader back a 19% pay demand from nurses? Which, of course, is a tricky question for the Labour leader, because inevitably a Labour government would not be able to give a 19% pay rise to nurses either. But I think, yeah, Keir Starmer really effective on this. And he took five questions to talk about the NHS and nursing. And then just a final conciliatory one on Ukraine.
Yeah, an interesting way to perhaps diffuse that exchange towards the end between the leader of the opposition and the prime minister. Interesting to hear Rishi Sunak's attacks on Labour, saying they're protecting their paymasters, the unions he was referring to, and saying that for working people it was Labour's nightmare before Christmas. Just didn't seem to land in the same way. And I think that this is, you know, is such an emotive issue, because the NHS, of course, so politically important here, but also the fact that they're anyone who has interacted with the health system knows the pressure that it's been under, and Rishi Sunak saying that it was because of COVID, but Keir Starmer making reference to that report that was commissioned by the government from the King's Fund health think tank, talking about a decade of neglect for the past 10 years for the NHS. That's something that was commissioned by the Department of Health and Social Care late last year to look into the challenges facing the NHS, that report being reported first by the Guardian newspaper yesterday.
Yeah, Starmer making the point that there are simply not enough NHS staff. He says there are 133,000 staff vacancies at the moment. And of course, the NHS is an enormous employer. And Starmer making the point that Labour would scrap non-dom status. This is, I've seen them try to make this point before. So it's trying to juxtaposition the tax status of a number of rich individuals in the country with problems in the NHS, saying they would take the money from that and spend it on the health service. Rishi Sunak saying that they're already investing billions. And then, as you say, trying to pivot to COVID, saying that we'd still be in lockdown under Keir Starmer, trying to bring up that what he perceives as the Labour leader's weakness on his response to the pandemic.
Yeah, now that's, of course, just one major political story that we've been following. Another is linked to the latest economic data we got here in the UK, which was to do with inflation, showing that the pace of inflation did slow down in the latest figures in November, but just to 10.7%. It's still eye-wateringly high for anyone looking at the cost of living. A group of MPs, though, are more worried about benefits than strikes. The Treasury Select Committee are saying that people are being put off returning to work because of the government's cost of living energy support payment limits.
Yeah, earlier today, Lizzie Burden and Tom McKenzie sat down with the chair of the committee, Harriet Baldwin.
Well, thanks, Lizzie, for having me on. And this report that we've published today is a cross-party report, and I think that makes it, you know, even more impactful. We welcome the fact that the Chancellor announced cost of living help for households, and he has extended that to next winter as well. So what we're saying is that the help that he's announced will be focused on those who are on means-tested benefits. They will get £900 next winter to help them with their energy bills. Now, the problem with it, as far as our committee is concerned, is that if you are on means-tested benefits plus £1 of earnings, you will not get this £900. So it's what we call a cliff edge. And we're saying that that could potentially start distorting the labour market as people realise that, you know, it's not worth them taking on an extra hour of work. So what we're suggesting to the government is that they smooth that cliff edge by spreading the payments out into six payments over the winter. And that that will mean that, for example, if you're made redundant just one day too late to benefit from the £900, you would capture some of it because you would be back on means-tested benefits for an additional period. So it's something we think is potentially distorting behaviour in terms of people taking on work. And you're absolutely right that in my constituency, I do hear from my employers how difficult it is for them to find staff at the moment.
And that's part of the broader conundrum for the UK labour market, is the lack of the falling participation rate, how to encourage more workers back into the workforce. So your prescription is aimed at partially at least tackling that. How entrenched is that problem? How unique is it to the UK? And what other policy measures should officials and lawmakers and the government be looking at to address that participation rate failure?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've actually had a really good labour market story over the last decade here in the UK. And I think one of the things that's contributed to that has been the rollout of universal credit, which was something that sort of was thought out under the previous Labour government and then implemented during the last decade by the Conservative coalition and then the Conservative government. And it basically smoothed those cliff edges. It meant that for every hour of extra work that you did, you received more pay. And it's been really helpful in increasing participation. But then when the pandemic struck, there was obviously money just paid to people on means-tested benefits. And now it looks as though it's becoming more entrenched in the way that we're tackling those in lower-income households. And I think what our committee is highlighting is that this could undermine that decade worth of work in terms of making work pay. And we need to make sure that we're vigilant and not creating sort of behavioural signals that cause people to find themselves better off on benefits than in work.
And Harriet, we've just ended a particularly bleak chapter of UK economic history. The IMF didn't hold back from criticising the mini-budget, but we haven't heard much of the IMF's views on Jeremy Hunt's fiscal statement. Is it time for the IMF to pipe up again?
Well, thank you. Thank you, Lizzie. I would love to have the IMF come and talk to our committee about what they think about the Jeremy Hunt autumn statement. We've invited them to come. They have refused to give us evidence in public. They have put out, Kristalina Georgieva put out one tweet in support of the measures that Jeremy Hunt put into the autumn statement. But I'd love to put out the invitation via your august news organisation to invite the IMF to give us their evidence on the record about what the Chancellor has done, the current Chancellor has done to put back some of those problems that they were highlighting from the previous Chancellor.
Just before we we're shifting slightly, because the big story, another big story of today is what's happening in the crypto space, the fallout of FTX, of course, and the legal ramifications of Sam Bankman-Fried. I just wonder, as you sit there on that committee, whether you really would love to see more powers given handed over to you to kind of address clearly the risks within this sector, to give you more power to probe a number of these companies that, of course, operate as well here in the UK.
You know, it's fortunate we do have actually an open inquiry on crypto at the moment. So it's turned out to be very topical, the timing. And we're hoping to pull our report together and get that out in early next year. And hopefully you'll have us back on the programme when we've come to a cross-party conclusion on those powers.
But do you need greater powers?
Well, I think, as you can see, there are a lot of, in my opinion, issues in terms of the 2.3 million people here in the UK who have reportedly now bought some crypto. And we've had some fascinating evidence over the course of this inquiry, particularly from those who've highlighted some of the ways football clubs are using sort of promotions to try and lure people into buying their particular token. And so I think it is a very, very timely report. And we are taking some very interesting evidence and no doubt will come to a newsworthy view when we report in the new year.
OK, so that was Harriet Baldwin, chairperson of the Treasury Select Committee, speaking to Tom McKenzie and Lizzie Burden. That's it from us for today. If you like the programme, don't forget to subscribe and give it 5 stars so other people can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you usually listen.
This episode was produced by James Walcock and Maruful Hussain was on sound. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. We'll be back with more tomorrow. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.